Hey everyone, before we get started, a couple quick DFSR notes. Our first NFL podcast is coming up this week, hopefully today. DFSR NFL podcast, and it's going to be the live Blog Talk Radio Experts League draft. Bunch of other industry people going through our kind of season-long picks, which we don't do a ton around here, but it was a lot of fun. Jay Soderberg, also known as Pod Vader's in that league. Pro Football Weekly is in there. Her Fantasy Football Podcast, Razzball, a bunch of other great names in the industry doing that draft, so go check that out. Also, remember to rate and review us on iTunes. Always helps. We're going to do a live podcast here. Sounds a little bit low because that's what happens when you get into the room together, but let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, August 15th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is...
James Davis.
And we are sitting across the table, the desk, the table, the...
The table desk?
The table desk. We're sitting across the table desk today.
It's kind of a bench, like a tall bench.
Yeah, it's a skinny desk for my office, which it's more... The desk is more designed to host one person on a podcast, and so a two-person live podcast takes a little... A little maneuvering, but that's okay. We have James Davis live in the DFSR studios, i.e. my home office, here visiting with the family. So we're going to kind of roll through an MLB podcast. I know we took most of last week off. We were traveling. Apologies to those that are reaching out, saying all of our fan that was wondering, where's the pod, where's the pod?
Don't make fun of us, dude. We have mad fans.
No, we did have...
And then we had mad fans, if you see what I did there.
Yeah, that's good. We're going to be talking a pretty full Tuesday slate in baseball. We'll probably skip over the 3 o'clock game just because... I don't know.
So we don't want to waste everyone's time.
Yeah, you gotta. The people that are doing the all day slates, God bless you. You're doing God's work on that because
You guys can commiserate with each other in chat today. We know you'll be in there.
We have a 7 o'clock start here. Things look pretty not crystallized to me, but look. I don't know. You said we were kind of talking 2 seconds beforehand. You said pitching looks obvious. What you said, kind of pitching looks obvious. What did you mean? Like, is there a specific guy that you thought looked just obvious here, or did you think just in general it breaks down in a way that you can kind of get behind?
I didn't realize you were going to put me on the spot, so now I just...
What did you think was going to happen on the podcast, that you were going to sit here and...
I didn't realize you were just going to, like, put me on the spot about my thoughts on today's slate. So, had I known, I would have prepared a little bit better, but since you have put me on the spot, I'll just go off the cuff for a second, and I'll say I like Alex Wood. I mean, I think that he continues to be too cheap. I think he just becomes a very clear play, probably on both sides for cash game purposes. And whenever you have kind of clarity around your top pitcher, I think that just opens up a lot of, you know, like, what is he, 9,600? He's against the White Sox. The White Sox have been bad against left-handed pitching all season. Like, whenever you can get that kind of surety at 9,600, not only does it open up the pitching slot to be less of a headache, but it also just frees up a ton of money for bats, too.
So. The other day, I said if Kluber was less, I forget his price, he was more expensive, but I was like, if Kluber was less than 80% start on FanDuel tonight, I would, like, I think I said I would do a naked run. And then... Luckily, did not have to pay that one off because he was like 89%. I kind of feel like Wood is going to be the same situation here. He's too cheap. He's got like a Kershaw-like money line at minus 350. There's very few pitchers. Well, this is the combination of when you're a good pitcher and you're just on like one of the best teams in baseball, especially from an offensive standpoint. Your win expectation is just through the roof.
Well, his win expectation this season, 14 wins, 1 loss, Doug. So that is very strong, the win expectation.
Wins are so stupid. But Wood, I mean, he's been so good this whole season. It's not surprising that he has wins. When you're on the Dodgers, who are one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball, and then you combine with, like, his peripherals are great, the xFIP is down in the low threes, he's not been so great after the All-Star break. I'm just not so worried about it here. At 9,600.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you about that. Like, in his 5 starts since the All-Star break, he has just 21 strikeouts, and his numbers, like, on just a Ks per 9 basis, a lot more in line with, like, what we would have expected for him coming out of the minors. Now, I know, granted, he was excellent in 60 innings last year, too, in terms of strikeout stuff, but is there any worry, you know, the old people are starting to figure him out sort of thing, given that we had a long track record of him being about a K per 9 guy and only that very small window where he was like a 10 Ks per 9 guy?
Well, it's not a small window. I mean, he's like 170 innings of 9.5-plus strikeouts per 9, like, between the last 2 seasons. Now, some of us have a bullpen, so it gets inflated a little bit when you are able to pitch in relief because you're able to just not have to roll through the order twice or 3 times or whatever.
Sure.
I'm a little concerned, but not to the point where I would downgrade his projection. I think we have a long enough run on him being a K per 9 guy at minimum that I'm just comfortable with it. 170 innings. Again, like, he has 600 major league innings in him. And I mean, but he had 170 innings with the Braves in 2014 of 9 strikeouts. It was really
the 2015 season that's driven the numbers down. Now, it was long. It was 190 innings. But, like, if you wanted to say that was the one season that was different for him, the rest of his career is pretty in line with what he's doing now. And, like, with Wood, we've said this before, he's such an elite ground ball guy that even if the strikeouts aren't there, he's able to just minimize so many mistakes just because if you just pitch ground balls, then you can just get out of innings. And yeah, sure. I think just the money line, the price is crazy too, because on a day where you have a game in Coors, this is exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you're looking to pay down at pitching to just maybe pay, and I get, and look, we'll get with this in the bats. I get there was like 3 total runs scored in Coors last night. It just like doesn't matter. And people are gonna, I saw people already commenting about it.
Do you really get that though, Doug? Because maybe you don't understand that.
I think I understand it. Anyway, after Alex Wood, who I do think is going to be pretty chalk. I mean, he's 9,600 on DraftKings too, which is insane. The price is just too low. I don't know if it's because the recent performance, the K's haven't been there. I mean, almost he's like more mispriced on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel, frankly. Like, to only have to pay 9,600 for a guy that maybe should be like in the 11,000 range just on the money line alone, and some previous stuff. After him, FanDuel, if we want to pivot off Wood, and I think you can, I think that's fine to kind of go in a different direction because there are some other strikeout arms in this slate. And that's kind of what you want to look for when you want to pivot off chalk. It's like, who has some big upside? Who do you like after him? There are some like real name pitchers going here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that if you're just going for safety, a guy that you might want to take a good look at is Madison Bumgarner. I think he just has he's a little bit more likely to pitch deeper into games than Wood is. But you're basically sacrificing everything else if you go in the direction of Bumgarner. So the K's have been less this year. The matchup is worse. So there's a lot to not like about Bumgarner as compared to Wood. Yeah, going up against the Marlins. Miami's still a reasonable park, not as good as his home park in terms of being a good pitcher's park. So the money line isn't there. There's a lot to, again, not like about Bumgarner as compared to Wood. But if you just want strictly a high upside arm that also has very much the ability to go deep into games, like, I think if you're looking for big tournament purposes, there's absolutely a scenario. I mean, we've seen it recently, right, where Wood goes like 5 innings, just runs a high pitch count. Maybe he lets up a run, doesn't get the win or something, where Bumgarner can easily go complete game. So I think that he's definitely a guy, if you want to pivot off Wood for big tournaments, I see him there. It's still going to be a tough sell for me for cash games. So.
Yeah, Bumgarner, for all his like quote-unquote struggles, and I think I'm putting in quote-unquote because he's been a decent pitcher this year. He just hasn't been the guy that we've been used to. He still averages over 6.6 innings per game.
That's excellent.
Right, so 6 2/3. So like the fact that he's able to just go that far into games just does give you such a high floor. You know, you worry a little bit about guys like Stanton. Stanton's having like a close to an MVP season, but after him, like, they still bat D. Gordon, who's atrocious against lefties, at the top of the lineup. They don't have Ozuna right now, or maybe they do actually. He was hurt for a little bit, but either way, I do like Bumgarner here. The implied runs are low. He's not. I want to couch this all by saying all the guys we're going to mention here, at least for our system, are significantly below Alex Wood. So yes. This is not like you can pivot for cash games thing. I do not think you should pivot off Alex Wood for cash games. This is more if you were looking to get away from his possibly higher ownership in GPPs. I wonder your thoughts on DeGrom here. Are DeGrom, our system, it's pretty low. I get why. Like, he's an underdog against the Yankees. That's more just probably, I mean, Sonny Gray's pitching for the Yankees. He's been pretty good this year.
So he's an underdog against the Yankees, isn't that sort of like, and after that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Right, like, just like, right, most teams are going to be underdogs. But DeGrom's so good that usually he kind of, even in the worst matchups, kind of comes in as like maybe like pick'em style just because he's been good. Do you think a guy like, because his strikeouts this season, he's striking out more than 10.5 per nine. The walks, he's increased the walks just a little bit over the course of the season, but not so, like, not into any out of bounds level. The XFIP is right in line with his career numbers. Do you see him as a guy, like, you know, I know you say a lot of times, you know, for tournaments, let's throw the money line and the win expectation out the window because at that point, like, someone's going to get the win and someone isn't. At this point, we just need to try to get the most points possible.
Yeah.
Do you see him as, like, a candidate for the most points possible? His last 3 games, 6 2/3, 9 strikeouts. Game before that, Dodgers, 5 innings, 8 strikeouts. Game before that, 6 innings, 10 Ks. Do you see him as just, like, is there a scenario where he just ends up with the most points on the slate?
Yeah, I would suspect there's probably a scenario. He's also facing the team that scored the fourth most runs in the majors this year, the team with the second highest WOBA against right-handed pitching. So I think, yeah, he's always going to be in that conversation regardless of where he's pitching and when he's pitching against who he's pitching. But the Yankees are just about as bad a matchup as you can get. The one thing I'll say, I guess, in their favor is that they are an above average team in terms of being able to strike them out. So their strikeout rate against right-handed pitching is 22.7%. So there's a chance he just runs it up and kind of, you know, gets out of sneaky spots and puts up a big total here. But you're really hoping a lot goes right for him and a lot goes wrong for some of the other arms going. So I guess he very unlikely to kind of cross my big tournament list, but yeah, I could see other people doing it.
Okay, so if he wasn't going to cross it, then we have Wood. I mentioned Bumgarner. I'm not like bullish on DeGrom by any means. It was more just like a tournament play. Do you see another guy on here that has big upside?
Yeah, I'm thinking Danny Salazar. Anytime Danny Salazar's pitching and you're talking about big upside, he's going to cross my lips. The guy is just insane on the K's this year, and he's just insane on the K's for his entire career, but up to 12.6 K's per nine this season. And obviously you're getting a big chunk of walks to go with that, so it's not like it comes without a cost. But yeah, if we're thinking big tournaments, the thing about a guy like Salazar is when things are going right, he can just continue to mow guys down. And so comparing him and DeGrom, I would say the upside is similar. Yeah, DeGrom's probably a little bit more consistent, but if you're just talking about a guy who can go out there and just hit the highest peak on his upside, Salazar seems like a higher guy to me. The Twins strike out almost exactly as often as the Yankees do, but you can shave 20 points of WOBA off in terms of their performance against right-handed pitchers. So, and he's cheaper too. So yeah, I would take Salazar over DeGrom for big tournaments.
Yeah, I don't say this about a lot of players, but just because I'm pretty emotionless when it comes to just baseball in general, just because you have to be, but I would say that I almost definitely have like Danny Salazar PTSD. I think I've rostered him for like two games that he pitched right before, like when he like wouldn't tell anyone he was hurt, and he was hurt, and then he went on the DL like right after the game. I'm pretty sure I've done that two times for him. He just has like some huge blow up games in his career, and I'm pretty sure I've rostered him for all of them. So like, again, I really don't subscribe to the never again thing, and I would easily play him. Like, if the system had him as the top guy, I wouldn't.
But also never again.
But hashtag never again. Hashtag auto X. But like, no, the no.
Put him in the Wodemizer.
No, I do think that like he's just one of those guys that has it is just a real thing. Like, he has significant blow up potential. Like, he has control issues at times. He just does walk too many guys, and if he's in like the walk zone, which he can get into,
yeah.
It can get real ugly real fast. That being said,
I'm not saying you have to marry the guy. Okay, like, just saying for a big tournament purpose.
Before the game against Tampa Bay, which he was still good in, the two games before that, 13 innings, 20 total Ks. Like, so there's very few pitchers in the majors who can kind of put up those
strikeout numbers. Even Ron Hunt and put out that can strikeout numbers.
No, right. So the fact that you're getting him a little bit cheaper than the guys we mentioned, I take that back. He's pretty expensive on DraftKings. He's 12 to, well, this is like, here's where we're in complete, like, I would call crazy town, messed up pricing on DraftKings.
Yeah.
Bumgarner 12.7, Salazar 12.2, DeGrom 12.6, Wood 3,000 less than those three guys. It's insane. So like, Wood, he could be, you can give him a 15% downgrade or 20% downgrade on the K's, like where we have him now. Like, you think he's not going to strike out the guys that he's been striking out up to this point, and he'd still be the play. Like, he's so far and away the easiest play on DraftKings that it's just kind of, I find it just to be silly. So I don't even know if I would, I don't even know how incentivized it'd be to pivot to any of those guys on DraftKings, just because you are then going to pay such a premium on the bats. Like, you're going to miss like three, you're going to have to like basically like sacrifice three different bats to like make up the pricing difference, I would say. Something like that. At minimum, two different bats to make up the pricing difference on those two guys. And there's no way you can play two of them together on this kind of slate. And it's a little different on FanDuel, where the pricing isn't as, I would say, messed up. Where he's like, he's only 1,000 less than DeGrom, and he's more expensive than guys like Salazar. That's Wood, that is. So after those guys, starting pitcher two on DraftKings, it's so funny because Wood is almost priced like a starting pitcher two. But is there a way that we can, if we want to like think about rostering up some bats here, there are some teams in some pretty good situations with higher run lines that it's going to cost a little bit to pay for. Guys in maybe the tier down than the ones we've mentioned so far, do you see guys in decent spots here?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two different directions you can go here. And I think you can go kind of safe, or you can go a little riskier. The guy in the safer category for me, as odd as it sounds maybe, is Kyle Hendricks. Hendricks has obviously been pretty up and down this season, but he can kind of go deep into games when things are breaking right. He's averaging just under six innings per start this year. And it's a pretty solid matchup against the Reds, getting them out of Cincinnati. So, yeah, it's nothing you're going to write home about. The money line sort of favors him. And all of this, obviously, is in context of the price, which at $7,700 allows you to basically pay up for all the Coors bats. And I think that's why our system is seeing him right now. Unlike some of the days we've talked about this season, there really aren't a lot of great non-cores options in terms of high money line games tonight. So the system is really trying to prioritize getting the big hitters in from that contest. So yeah, I think you can go Wood and Hendricks and basically get the cheap, most expensive guy at all the other positions and feel pretty good about it.
One thing with Hendricks right now, the money line is in, the run line is not. So yeah, we're always waiting on this with the Cubs at around, this is 9:45 Eastern time. We are typically waiting for this information. I have it set at 8.25 runs as sort of like a baseline run expectation. If it were to come in at 9, let's say, now the wind is blowing in, at least right now. Or excuse me, the wind is projected to be blowing in at game time. And so there's a difference there.
But you get all the only news you need from the weather report.
Right. So the if this number were to come in closer to like the 9.5 range on him, it would probably be a little bit closer. I'm wondering your thoughts. Let's say like the run line does come in a little higher and Hendricks maybe we're just like less excited about him. The strikeouts really aren't huge for him. He's kind of just a guy that just you're hoping can eat some innings and stay out of huge trouble. The walk rate kind of near 3 has me a little bit worried about him. He's just kind of a guy. He's like in the Tanner Roark category.
Standard Mike Leake, pitcher 2, yep, not just, excited, but just hoping he doesn't kill you.
Right, like happens to be on a good team, so he gets a few more win point bumps.
Pitched 5 innings and gets the win.
Right. Yeah. I wonder your thoughts on Dinelson Lamet. He's facing a Philly team who's been pretty damn bad this year. He gets him in a good park in San Diego. He came up through the minors as a strikeout guy. He's been able to translate it to the majors. So he struck out, I mean, just at a glance, let's say he struck out of around 11 batters per 9 in the minors. And he's been doing that through 68 innings in the majors. Like, so it's not like, so sometimes we want to worry, like, do the strikeout things come out of nowhere for a guy? That's usually a pretty big red flag. Like, if the guy's been spent a ton of time in the minors and not being able to strike anybody out, and all of a sudden, it's a red flag. That's not the case for him here. He has a 5 ERA. The xFIP is about a run less. And I'm just wondering your thought, like, is this guy, he's a good matchup, good park, and he has strikeout ability. If you, like, let's say it was like a coin flip, like, let's say our projection system had him and Hendricks, like, around the same projection, which actually could be the case today. Would you feel safer here with Lamet just because of the K's?
Yeah, I'd probably snap Lamet off in that case just because, like you mentioned, the park and the opponent are so strong for him, even in comparison to Hendricks. I think that the K upside is very real with him, you know, like the double digit strikeout stuff actually could just be legit. Kind of reminds me of Danny Salazar in some ways, with a better park and a worse track record. The thing that concerns me about him is how deep he pitches into games. Like at 13 starts this year, gone just 68 innings, there's a very real risk you just don't get him for that fifth inning, and that's a real problem. And that's going to be a problem for young pitchers with big strikeout stuff, but who also walk a lot of guys. Like, they run a lot of deep counts. The Phillies aren't necessarily the most patient team in the league, so from that perspective, I think it looks pretty good. But he's just so different than Hendricks, it's very hard to determine who's safe and who isn't.
Yeah, I love, it's more for me, I'm kind of reading this on the matchup. Like, the Phillies are just such a weaker team. Vegas does like Lamet here, -140 with the Phillies implied somewhere around 3.75 runs. That's pretty good. This is just the kind of team that you would want to attack, like in this park. Like, if a guy like him can just, I hate to use like stupid baseball scout verbiage or whatever because I'm not that, but if you can just like pitch strikes to this team in this park, like, you can go deeper in games. I know that's just been sort of his issue. I probably would trend more to Lamet here. I like the idea that he can mitigate some of his damage by just striking guys out. Like, you're not going to be, like, with a Hendrick start, you're watching it, and you're kind of watching it, like, by holding your hands over your eyes and then, like, slowly moving 2 fingers apart and just kind of looking and being like, oh, I heard the bat hit the ball. That could be gone.
You see the outfielder running and you're like, it's a catch on the warning track, just like I knew all along.
Yeah, I was completely confident.
Called it.
I think either way, I'm probably going to end up pairing Wood with one of those two guys just I just think, you know, I think that, you know, some people might make a case for Marco Estrada here. Tampa Bay does strike out a lot. I'm just the fact that I'm getting out of the AL and into the NL is probably good enough for me on the Estrada thing. And then, like, the list does get just a little bit weaker with some of these matchups. Gio, not a great matchup there in LA, just because they don't strike out a ton. Nova doesn't strike anybody out. Porcello, just not a great matchup in Boston against St. Louis. All these guys are just kind of like meh, I would say. I think I would just rather trend toward guys in the better matchups, and that strikes me here, mostly the Met, and to some degree Hendricks. All right, we're going to get into some stats here. Hit us up with a sponsor read. I get to watch you do the sponsor read, which I usually
Well, then you'll see, Doug, that I don't read anything at all.
Whoa.
This is totally off the cuff. And I'm going to tell you all about Fantasy Factor without even looking at my computer screen, Doug. So fantasyfactor.com is a great site for casual players who want to play DFS but don't want to go up against sharks putting in 150 lineups per contest like you and I, Doug. We're sharks snapping our jaws in the water on some of these other sites. But on fantasyfactor.com, we're simply not able to do that. The contest aren't quite big enough. It's great for players who want to buy in for say $100 a night, and you go over there and it's the salary cap game that you're used to without a lot of the risks of having to face the best players in the world. So fantasyfactor.com, use promo code DFSR to get a $25 no drip bonus. So it's 25% up to $25 no drip bonus, which means you can put that action right into play right after you deposit. So check out fantasyfactor.com and get started today.
All right, stacking today, we have the game in Coors. They get the Rockies get Sean Newcomb here. He's a lefty. He does have some strikeout stuff. Their implied run line is the highest on the slate here. Do you get worried about Newcomb's not a good pitcher, but I mean they're kind of a little lefty heavy in that lineup with Blackman at the top. I take that back. They have Blackman and LeMahieu and Arenado. Do you see the Rockies as being like the clear stack target here today, or do you think you can fade them in this matchup?
No, I think the Rockies are a clear stack target, particularly on DraftKings when you can go double cheap at pitcher and really get all of them. Also, the issue I have with Newcomb is his name is based on like that game where you throw the volleyball over the net and then you just catch it. It's like for people that are too unathletic to play volleyball. So the fact that his name is Newcomb, not a great sign for me in terms of his genetics and pedigree.
I don't think it's by spelling it's based on like your new comb, like the comb that you just purchased.
Even worse, honestly. Even worse. At some point, someone in his family was really proud about this new comb that they had.
So. Anyone see my new comb?
Maybe it's an intelligence issue then, not an athletics issue. But yeah, no, I love stacking the Rockies here. All kidding aside, taking them against the left-hander in Coors is just asking to put up huge numbers. And even really going the other way, Freeland this season has a reasonable ERA, but not a guy you should be scared of if there are a couple one-off Braves you want to throw in there. So yeah, both sides of this look very, very strong, and I think you can actually afford it on a day where you can go cheap at pitching.
No, yeah, for sure. Arenado sat yesterday, but it wasn't an injury-related thing, I don't believe, so he should be back in the lineup. He's going to Newcomb, that is going to struggle probably through the middle of that lineup. LeMahieu, Arenado, Reynolds, and then Luke Roy probably hitting sixth. I mean, even Story at 3,200, he's really stunk this year and he strikes out a ton. I still think it's pretty like the plate appearance expectation is so much higher here for the Rockies than most other teams. I do think you see, as long as you can go cheap, well, this is why you're going to see it, because Alex Wood's just so cheap. This is the other reason you're going to be incentivized to play him. I mentioned that with Alex Wood before, but these guys are just too cheap. Now, the Braves, I do think, are a little too expensive across the board, considering they're just not as good of an offense. The bottom of that lineup is really garbage. Albies, Swanson, Danny Santana. It gets pretty bad down there at the end. I get that the top of their lineup is fine, though they're a little bit more lefty on lefty here, and you're not liking that. I don't think I would play the Braves as much, if at all, in this spot, but I'm with you that the Rockies are right there. I'm stumbling here because I'm a little confused by it, but the Red Sox, I can never figure out with the Red Sox if like they're a public-y team and Vegas just kind of goes there. If they are just a better team, like Eduardo Nunez is better, Devers is kind of really shored up with the problems they were having at third base in the middle of that lineup. We have him for almost 5.5 implied runs here against Mike Leake. Mike Leake is not terrible, but do you think that run line for them is accurate? Do you think they get just like a little Boston bump? Like the Yankees kind of get the same thing at times. Do you think there's like an inflated bump that you get because they're the Red Sox, or do you think that they are just a favorite to put up a lot of runs in this matchup?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that, well, some of it has to be the public nature of their team, but I think a lot of it too is just the fact that they're very deep. A lot of the teams that you'll see, like say you're the Pirates, right? Or you're just some team in the National League who basically punts the eighth spot because your catcher has a 500 OPS and your seventh slot is like some shortstop with a 650 OPS, right? The Red Sox don't really do that in quite the same way. Like Jackie Bradley Jr. bats last for them and he's got a 750 OPS.
Which is good for your night. It's great for your night.
It's incredible for your night. Right. That's 400 more than most National League pitchers, right? And so the fact that they just go so deep, it's interesting because it makes them fairly unattractive for stacking purposes. And actually at some point, I think I'll try to look more into, like, maybe leading up in the next season, figuring out how impactful it is when you're a top-heavy team versus just a deeper team. Because I think what happens with the Red Sox is, yeah, they show up as one of the teams with the highest totals, and people will be like, hey, how are no Red Sox showing up in the lineup? But if Jackie Bradley Jr. is, you know, is going to be part of the run-scoring equation, he bats ninth, all of a sudden you're spreading 5.5 runs out over nine guys versus a more top-heavy team, maybe like the Astros, I don't know, some other team that where a lot of the power is condensed into the top four slots, and those teams are going to be a lot more stackable.
No, yeah, I'm totally with you. They are a deep team. Leak is a pretty extreme ground ball pitcher, and so that does worry a little bit from like the home run. He's an extreme ground ball pitcher that also lets up a lot of home runs, right? So like when the fly ball does happen, it's like a home run. But when it doesn't, it's a ground ball. It's crazy because he only has this season 23% fly ball rate, but then 15% home run the fly ball rate. And but by the way, that 15% home run the fly ball is like not so out of bounds with the rest of his career. He has a 14% home run the fly ball rate for his career. That's pretty damn high for that number. So I do like the Red Sox in this situation. Other teams that you like outside of them, Red Sox are a little overpriced across the board. Betts is not so expensive, so I think you can go there. Some of these other guys like Nunez, who's been just absolutely on fire since they traded for him. It's so funny when trades like work out
Insta workout.
It was a good trade, don't get me wrong, but also it just looks amazing now because he's been just absolutely just one of the best hitters in baseball since he moved over. After the Red Sox team, is there another team that you like that maybe we can get a little bit cheaper?
Yeah, I'll slide a little bit off board actually for this one, and there's no money line on this game yet, so maybe Vegas will disagree with me here, but I kind of like both sides of the Baltimore-Seattle game. And when I'm trying to think about stacks, especially for big tournaments, I really like to key in on starting pitching. So almost no matter what Vegas thinks, I like to key in on pitchers who have the highest blow-up potential, and I'm looking really hard at Andrew Albers here. So Albers, most people aren't going to be familiar with his work because he just hasn't pitched very much in the major leagues in the last few years. And the last time he pitched anything remotely resembling an entire season was 2013, when he only had 10 starts. He pitched 60 innings and had 3.7 Ks per nine. So this is a guy without really much major league pedigree whatsoever. I know he was something of a prospect coming up. But yeah, it's this huge injury history. He's very, very susceptible to not going deep into games. And yeah, I mean, granted, in this case, Baltimore, they have a lot of these weird like reverse platoon guys, and facing a lefty isn't exactly their sweet spot. But if you can get guys like, say, Jonathan Schoop towards the top of the lineup, you can get guys like, you know, Manny Machado, who, while not a conventional lefty killer, still can hit left-handed pitching, maybe even get Tim Beckham at the top of the lineup. So I do think there's a lot to like here about looking at Baltimore. And then I mentioned the other side of the ball as well. Wade Miley, simply bat. There's really nothing else to say about the guy. The fact that he's gone 120 innings in the major leagues this season with a 5.12 walks per nine is just completely absurd. And so the likelihood in any given start that he goes out there and just gets absolutely stormed is right there as well. Now, Seattle, the only caveat that I'll give there is I do think that side is a little bit riskier just because if Baltimore aren't conventional lefty killers, Seattle really isn't. So yeah, but both sides like of that, I think either of those teams is a candidate to put up the highest total runs today.
Yeah, Baltimore put up a ton of runs last night. They are going to go righties just basically down the entire lineup. And so even if like Jones isn't like, he's a reverse platoon split guy, you know, Mancini and Trumbo.
He can still hit Andrew Albers, let's be clear.
And Mancini and Trumbo in the middle of the lineup are. Like, those guys are lefty killers. I think Albers does have a lot of trouble here. I'm not sure what they're waiting on information-wise for the Vegas line. I do suspect it comes in sort of in that 5.5 range for Baltimore, would be my guess, like sort of off the cuff. Though I've never been wrong about those things before, so never mind. It's just probably going to be correct. All right, we got to get out of here.
Right in stone.
We got other stuff to do. Reminder, I said at the top of the show, our first football podcast is out right now, so go check that out, the DFSR Football, DFSR NFL podcast. You can find that on iTunes.
Wait, is that when you drop knowledge on those guys in that expert league draft on Blog Talk Radio?
14 team deep roster. I was waiting with the big
boys.
And
you just dropped fire on them constantly, pick after pick, and they were like, no!
So that's up there right there.
No!
That's up there right now. I'm hoping that either late this week or early next week, we'll have another initial NFL podcast where we will be this like sort of giving cursory thoughts on FanDuel and DraftKings pricing, which is up now. Like, we're working on getting our first run of projections up and accurate the first time out. They're never going to be really, you know, right on the nose accurate this far out. But we do want to get something up there for people to go check that out. So do that, and we will be back again tomorrow talking more baseball. Enjoy your Tuesday.